Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Welcome back to Hacks and Hobbies. If you missed part one, go listen. Fagwan Bilal shared his journey from distressed properties to raising $50 million in capital and building investor trust. Today in part two, we're diving into the blueprint, how Fagwan actually structures deals, manages risks, and build portfolios that are profitable and secure. Fagwan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, we learned so much in the last episode and how you structured those deals differently. But today I want to go deeper into those core elements. So walk us through your process when you look at a distressed asset or multifamily opportunity. What are the core elements you focus on to make it profitable?
So the core elements that I focus on to make it profitable, and I'll speak to the luxury spec homes that we do, it's all about area, right? Real estate is neighborhood. So we made a transition after COVID from the low-end areas where we would maximum ARV would be 350. Acquisition probably would be somewhere in the low 100s, and we'd probably max put 75, 80,000 into it and try to target a $50,000 like net profit. After COVID, that area got flooded. We had a lot of New Yorkers transition to New Jersey. Houses were selling 30% of a list. So it got really tough to really buy at a discounted price to still make those margins. So we was raising a lot of capital at the time. Capital started to come in 8 months or so after, you know, COVID, whatever. So we decided to move up a notch and compete with the builders. And we also had lenders that was willing to lend us money. Interest rates were very cheap. So we started to explore doing ground up construction in addition. So part of our evaluation is school systems in the area. What is the average income of the area? Like, you know, it's the affordability. Can these people live here afford it? The type of client or avatar that we wanted to target. Type of designs that we need to do. Do we just want to do regular Home Depot Lowe's luxury, or do we want to do like real luxury? Do we want to add touchscreen systems in the house and all types of stuff? Do we want to add any like pet washing stations, those little extra amenities, 3-car garage instead of 2? And we started to price that out, and we looked at on the market new construction price per square foot where it sell. And what we determined was that, wow, it's actually better to build new. Right? Because you know the product, you know, have all these surprises. Like before, we would gut the place out and find all these foundation issues or rotted wood. Now we're tearing the houses down to either existing foundation, building on top of that, and or new foundation. And we developed a process, and we see that it's more profitable. It takes a little bit longer, but it's way more profitable than doing the single home. So and just to give you some color on it, we would probably buy a house, and our average home price in the markets we are is $650. So in the areas we buy, we would pay $700, maybe $750 or $800,000for the property. And then what would happen from there is we would tear it down and we would build it. So the magic number is the house would need to sell for 3 times the amount we purchase it for. So on an $800,000 purchase, it would need to be $2.4 million sell. Because it will cost us, depending on the size house we build, anywhere from 220, 235 per square foot. If we're building a 3,500 square foot home, it's cheaper versus a 5,500 square foot home. So we need to make sure that we can sell it for 3 times the amount that we purchase it. That's the simple formula to use. And then if it pans out from there, we look at days on the market for those types of deals, and then, you know, we execute. So that's kind of the secret sauce, if you will.
3 times the purchase price is what you're aiming for. So,
correct.
That means that if you bought it for, like you gave me the numbers, right? You bought it at 650, you're selling it for, you know, 2.8 mil, which means that construction cost is probably going to be part of that profit, right? So you can actually make back the investment that you put in as well as something on top as well.
Now, correct. That's usually the formula that works for us.
Yeah. How do you balance profitability versus security?
So it's really with investors, if you're speaking from that angle, you know, how do we protect investors? The investors get a pref. There's no equity split with investors on a deal. So, you know, a current fix and flip fund we have, we're paying investors 12% and they get paid at the end of the term, right? Mm-hmm. It's a deferred interest. So there's no monthly distributions, there's nothing, right? So we said we pay you 12% per annum. And basically there's a UCC filing against the property. And when we sell the property, you get paid. So that way we won't have rolling interest and we can use the capital to get through the project pretty quickly. And we control the profitability by managing the cost of the construction. Right, making sure that we're on target. We usually put a 15% contingency fee against our construction budget just in case. And we usually try to stay on track with that. It's really tough. Out of my 26 years of doing this, yeah. I can tell you I've never stayed on budget with construction. It's always something. So what mm-hmm. I've learned, you know, 15%, if you want to get a little bit aggressive in your underwriting, you'll put 20% contingency. You'll also take 15% away from your ARV, yeah, at the renovation value. Just in case market shifts. And if it pencils out with those parameters, then it's a great deal and you move forward with it. But that's usually some of the things we have in underwriting and the quality control checks we have to make sure it's profitable and everyone eats at the end of the day.
That's powerful. You know, getting understanding those numbers and having your numbers dialed in, I think it's really important to see where everything is going. But currently what's happening in the market, you know, where we have these ICE raids going on, there's a lot of labor shortages. How are you, like, how is it coming down to, you know, if you have a team constructing new stuff or, you know, has it affected you at all?
Not really. Most of the guys I've been dealing with for 15 plus years, I mean, mm-hmm. they're citizens. They don't have any of those issues. I think that's probably more like out west, maybe Arizona, Texas, okay. and stuff like that. But the Northeast is a different ball game. Mm-hmm. I haven't experienced any, you know, ICE picking up any of my team members.
You're absolutely right. Most of the stuff that we hear is probably on the Southwest and South area where mm-hmm. there are closer to the border and whatnot. Now, a lot of listeners are trying to go from one or two properties to building a scalable business. What advice would you give for that leap?
What advice would I give for a leap to go from one or two properties to scaling it? I think, you know, you want to scale to be better instead of scaling to be bigger is really what you want to focus on, right? I've made the mistake of scaling to be bigger. And there's something that my mentor told me that stuck with me. He said, there's three parts of this business. You need the money, right? The capital.
Yeah.
You need the assets to buy and scalability. And scalability is where people always fail, right? If I gave you $10 million right now, can you deploy it?
Nope. Not really.
It's a question for you. If I gave you $10 million right now, will you be able to deploy it in real estate?
If I know the right people.
Yeah, but right now, if I set $10 million in your lap, right? So you have to have the assets is what I'm saying.
Right.
Now yes, I can deploy that capital because I have a pipeline of assets.
Correct.
Now you have the systems in place to manage that, right? So that's what people miss out on. SOPs, standard operating procedures, all that stuff, right? People want to scale to be bigger, but you need the foundational pieces in place to scale to be better. Like, what are your SOPs like? Do you have written standard operating procedures for every process of your business, right? Do you have, is your business task oriented? Do you have a CRM with automations and back-end support and all of that stuff? Like, people fell, and I fell with that, right? So when I started to learn how to build the Empire State Building Foundation first and put all the systems in place, that's when you scale to be better. So if you want to go from one to two houses to 20 houses a year, I'm in a mastermind called Collective Genius. These guys do 50, 100, 300 deals a year.
Wow.
Right? They're like in the Midwest or areas, Ohio, whatever, where areas where properties sell less than 100, but they're selling 300 a year. A buddy of mine in New Jersey, in South Jersey, he's doing 35, 50, 40 houses a month. He's killing it because he has the systems and processes in place. Right? So he can manage if somebody give him $10 million, he can manage that because he has the foundational structure. So I always tell people when they say, hey, I want to get bigger, I want to grow faster, what systems and processes do you have in place, SOPs, do you have that written document? It helps you with training, onboarding, all of that stuff. And then you can, you'll grow eventually, right, from there.
No, that's so true. And having those systems and processes are so important, even for gardening, right? You got to have the right soil mixer. You got to have the right area to even deploy. Like if somebody comes and gives me like 20 plants or something, I need to have the space to be able to deploy that. And so having that 10 million, I need to have it, have the systems in place to put that into so it can work in building, building that scalability or the growth as well.
Correct. Scaling to be better instead of bigger.
Exactly. Scaling to be better instead of being bigger. Now, that's those are some of the mistakes that people can avoid is, you know, having those systems in places, work with somebody like you to help them build these systems or you know, follow your path. Now, talk to me about how can someone use partnerships or creative financing to scale?
So how to use partnerships and creative financing to scale? Creative financing is really a great tool that helps you scale because it's less cash intensive, like upfront. So it gives you the ability to be able to use the seller or the person who has the property for sale. It gives you the ability to utilize them so you don't have to have a hefty down payment. And it allows you to do multiple deals.
Sure.
So that's one way. Partnering with people to scale is good as well because it helps you build your resume. I remember early on when I started, I would do 50-50 deals with investors. You know, I would do all the work. They would put up all the capital to buy it and fix it, and I would do all the work. And I knew a lot of people who would say, hey, that's you know, they're getting too much. They're just giving the money. But what they didn't understand is I was doing my own deals, plus I was partnering, and that gave me the ability to build my resume. Yeah. So when I went in front of a real lender, I said, hey, I did 10 deals this year, right? I was able to double the amount. Even though I had to give 50% away, I was able to double the amount of my deal flow. And then I was able to turn off that 50% faucet and go, hey, I'm no longer doing 50%. You know, it's a lot of work. Maybe we do 70-30, or you just become a lender and I'll pay you X percentage and stuff like that. So, you know, it has its advantages.
I love it. I love it, Fuquan. Basically, you're telling me is that you're not just about profits. You've built your brand around transforming communities. So talk to me, how does community impact tie into long-term wealth?
Yeah, so here, I give an example of what we're doing in Macon, Georgia. I'm actually at one of my properties now in Macon, Georgia, and I have this concept that I actually was at a event, and it was a lady, we took lunch, and she's in the same space. Mm-hmm. And I was enlightened by our conversation because she said, I do multifamily and I take complex to community. And I go, oh, I'm going to steal that. Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Just being transparent with you. I liked it. And she was passionate about it. It wasn't just a buzzword.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know, you come from where I come from, low income area, single parent, welfare and all of that. And what I realized when I got in this business was there were a lot of people just focusing on the profits. And Fuquan, you told me your story, you resonated, you got involved with real estate, you like going back to your communities, revitalizing the area, renovating the properties to quality, affordable housing, giving residents a better place to live, adding properties back to the tax roll is value, value, value. But she said, what I noticed when I got in this business was people would buy multifamily, they would turn the units, they would focus on operational costs, they would give great curb appeal. Yeah. But what was happening with the people who lived there in these low-income areas was nothing. Everything was for the property. So the concept that I learned from her is complex to community is additional services that can support the people in the complex, right? And creating a community, whether it's financial literacy, whether it's Zumba classes, whether it's learn how to put your resume together, whether it's extra tutoring for your kids. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations surrounding wherever you have your property, and you can tap into them and have them come to your property in a function room and provide these services. Now, everybody might not attend, but if you're blasting it out, hey, this weekend we have this, we have Zumba classes, or we have stats for the kids, right, to keep them off the streets, or we have karate classes or whatever, right? You can connect with nonprofit organizations that get government funding to come to your property and teach people how to become first-time home buyers or financial literacy. And that's how you shift the mindset and you go from complex to community.
Man, that's so powerful, because we all need that. We all need that support. We all need the community to coming together so that we can rise together as well, right? Now, Gwant, how do you measure success beyond the numbers?
That's an interesting question, because I believe only people can be successful, not a business.
I agree.
And success is an optimized daily experience sustainable over time. It's actually one of my core values, success. Mm-hmm. It's performance, accountability, transparency, and success is one of my company core values. And it's an optimized daily experience that's sustainable over time. Only people who could be successful, not businesses.
That's so true. Businesses are just a vessel that people, like, businesses cannot exist without people, essentially.
If people are successful, if your team members, your employees, and all those people are successful, they whistle while they work, and a business becomes successful.
Amen. Absolutely. Absolutely. Last question for you. What legacy do you hope to leave in the real estate world?
For me, legacy is what you leave in people, not for people. Just the grit, the hard work, the relentless attitude is really the desire, passion for people to see what I do and go, wow, this guy is nonstop. He's relentless, and he's always giving value, paying it forward. Those attributes is what I would like for people to remember me by. Then that's really what I'm instilling in my kids now, right? Yeah. It's not about the assets that you're going to have. It's what I leave in you that's going to be the most valuable that you'll keep forever. So that's pretty much how I look at it.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for breaking down and, you know, not just the big wins, but the structure, discipline behind the deals that you're making, and also the legacy that you're leaving in people. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, right? I want to instill in my children, hey, look what's possible. There's people all over the world doing all sorts of things and enjoying the work that they do because the passion that they have, which then took them to the profit that they are now reaping from the rewards. Okay. Anyways, this has been really incredible and it's incredibly insightful. Thank you so much for coming.
Sure. Appreciate you for having me.
And Gwant, where can people connect with you and, you know, learn more about what you teach?
So you can go to my website, nngcapitalfund.com. If you are a accredited investor looking to partner with us on deals, you can schedule a discovery call if you'd like to learn more about your investment theory and your journey. You can also catch me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, at Gwant Bilal.
Perfect. I'll be sure to include those in the show notes. And thanks again. Till next time. See you again.
Appreciate it.
Guys, if you're looking to move beyond theory and into action, take Gwant's lessons on discipline, investor trust, and deal structure. Apply even one of these insights and you'll be closer to building wealth with security. Until next time, keep learning, keep hacking, and keep building the life you were meant to live. And follow Gwant on the link provided in the show notes. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you for listening to this Hacks and Hobbies episode. Junaid would love to hear from you, so please leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Visit hacksandhobbies.com to find additional information on the guest today, as well as the show notes.